Hello, hello, hola, como estás, lo baja, amigos. Thanks for making a little time for me today. My heaping dose of gratitude goes out to Mike Perlman and Eliseo Garcia and the entire team of Nora volunteers that produce the happiest race on earth. I'm still in a little post-Nora funk. I know you've been hearing about Nora week after week after week. Well, I'm still in a little bit of a post-Nora funk. I don't have enough dust on my throat or adrenaline in my veins. But anyways, Mike and Eliseo do an amazing job, and I am thankful and I want to acknowledge them. Today's show is with Josiah Rowe. Josiah is a photographer and a storyteller, and he produces the excellent Journal of Lost Time. He's also calls himself a part-time van lifer, and he created the Escapar a la Baja, and that is a van life and overlanding gathering. Hopefully next year I'll be down there podcasting live from the event. And without further ado, Josiah Rowe. Hey, this is Michael Emery. Thanks for tuning into the Slow Baja. This podcast is powered by Tequila Fortaleza, handmade in small batches, and hands down, my favorite tequila. Hey, I want to tell you about your new must-have accessory for your next Baja trip. Benchmark Maps has released a beautiful, beautiful Baja California Road and Recreation Atlas. It's a 72-page large format book of detailed maps and recreation guides that makes the perfect planning tool for exploring Baja. Pick yours up at benchmarkmaps.com. Hey, Josiah Rowe, Josiah Q. Rowe, we're here on Slow Baja finally. I had always wanted to be in person with you in Baja, sipping a Fortaleza. Doing this around a campfire is where I envisioned it would all go down. But you're in Bisbee. I'm in San Francisco. We're connected through your high-tech skills. You had to walk me through the connection. So, dude, so good to see you.
It's really good to see you too. I love your podcast. It was a joy to stumble upon it. I love the logo. It made me laugh when I first saw it, and it's been good because it's nice to have. I think it's right now. I think it's the kind of definitive way that I've been introduced to parts of the peninsula and the community down there, and the people that make it pretty much my favorite place on earth. And so just thank you for all the work you're doing. It's awesome. I love it. I look forward to a new episode coming out.
Mutual Appreciation Society going on right now. I've been on a deep dive on your Journal of Lost Time and your Escapar a la Baja. And it's a masterclass. I mean, what you've put online is a masterclass on travel and how to share that travel with your pro driving tips. And funny to see friends of mine in your photographs. It's just, you know, from remote fishing camps in San Rafael to Francisco and Mulegé. I'm seeing familiar faces from my travels. So let's jump into it, as I like to say. We've done the welcomes. Tell me about your background and how you got to be a storyteller. Where'd you grow up? How did this affliction come to you?
Well, that's a good question. Well, I moved to California from the East when I was a kid. And I still remember that first moment on I-80 coming up into Wyoming and looking south. I think it was probably the Uintas. And just that moment when I saw, I think, the mountains for the first time of the West. And that's when I just kind of got the bug of exploration. And, you know, you take a circuitous path through your life. But my dad was a minister, which is a kind of storytelling. So I got a little bit of that in my DNA. And when I decided to walk away from the tech thing about, 6 or 7 years ago, I had some in San Francisco where I was living, which is still my favorite city on earth. I think it's beautiful and I'm jealous you're there right now. I had some folks that started buying some of my photos, which I was doing in an amateur capacity. And I kind of thought, well, who has money to pay me to travel and keep exploring? It's a big world and I want to see as much of it as I can before it gets dark. I kind of saw tourism boards and DMOs, destination marketing organizations. So I started pitching them on, hey, I want to come hang out in your town for a couple weeks and kind of geek out on it, and I'll shoot a bunch of photos. And that naturally led to videos. And then I was looking for a way to do deeper and more immersive storytelling, something where it wasn't just the top five trails for hiking in Mulihae, even though there's some awesome trails and I love that. But and I was sitting there talking with some friends, and I was like, I just want to do something where it's about kind of losing track of time and really kind of being in a place. And that's when I kind of stumbled on the name, and I'm like, I'm just going to start my own publication. And then joyously, a month later, the pandemic hit, which was awesome. Nothing like starting a travel and tourism or the oriented publication in a pandemic. But somehow we powered through it and have grown. And now I've got a nice, awesome little team of people. And yeah, that's kind of how the whole magazine side of what I do and the storytelling side of things. We kind of always aim for, we want to get somebody who wants to sit down and really get immersed in a place for a long amount of time. And even when we present our content on a channel like Instagram, it's always 10 image gallery posts that you swipe through to kind of really do a little, to use a recent example, like Rancho Escondido and Don Oscar and his family out there. We don't want just one image, but really sit there and try to get a sense of what it feels like to be there. Hopefully to inspire people to go explore more, you know, get off their couch, go outside their house, go see this big, beautiful world we live in. Yeah, that's
Yeah,
kind of where it started.
you guys take a pretty deep dive on these places. And
We
again,
try
I've been
to.
on a deep dive. I've been on a deep dive on your deep dive, and it's beautifully, it's beautifully done. It really, you know, I think, you know, I want to find out about your inspiration. But people always ask about, you know, why am I doing what I'm doing? And I think it's unfortunately or fortunately, it's just growing up with National Geographic magazines before the internet, you know,
Oh,
before the
yeah.
internet there
Oh,
was
yeah.
National Geographic, and that, and having a cabinet full of those things was like the internet is today. That's how you
Oh,
found out
100%.
about places. And so you've started Journal of Lost Time, and my take on that is, you know, it's a, you've got places all over the world that you or your correspondents have put together travel logs on. That's no easy feat to put that all together and present it as beautifully as you are and as thoughtfully as you are. Where that
I mean
do you peel the curtain back on that and tell me about how that, it, Josiah is
it's
also
definitely
recovering from a bout of the,
Yeah, I
he's got a
apologize for
bit
the
of a
cough.
cough going on here. Yeah, but he's
Well, yeah,
sipping on a little Fortaleza, so I like that.
yeah, oh yeah, the Fortaleza is great. I really appreciate you introducing me. It's man, it's great. The it's definitely a hustle and a grind. But it doesn't feel like, yeah, it doesn't, it's a joy to get to look. And sometimes I feel like I want to tell people, don't look at an article on our website on your damn phone. Please go look at it on the largest screen you can. Because those images are beautiful. And we've got some really, really, really wonderful, inspiring people who the photography is an emotional thing for them, and they do it because they love it and they're passionate. It's why I do it. And yeah, there's definitely a grind finding people to who I mean, in the most crass terms, are willing to write a check to you to do what you do. But it doesn't feel like sales in the sense that if I'm talking to one of these folks, it's because I'm really stoked, happy, joyous, and inspired about their corner of the world. And I love the work of figuring out how to do photos and videos and to tell a story that's true and real and lovely about that corner of the world and to share it with people. And so, yeah, there's definitely processes we put into place, like how things make it out into Pinterest and Instagram and into our emails and editorial calendars and all that sort of, you know, how the sausage gets made. But I even enjoy figuring that stuff out. It feels like you're tinkering on the engine of the vehicle that you're using to explore a place like Baja. So that doesn't bother me too much. Yeah, it's been fun to watch it grow. It's been fun to add folks to the team. It's fun when you get emails from people who are inspired by what you're doing. It's fun when people are like, "Yeah, I saw Don Oscar on your Instagram, and we went out there and stayed with them. What a wonderful family!" And we sang music around the campfire, and then went out to San Francisquito and watched the tuna go running into that little bay there. And next time I'm taking a fly fishing line or something like that, like that makes me feel really happy when I hear those kind of feedback, and feels like I got to share a little bit of joy with the world. And you don't feel alone. You feel less alone is what it is, you know, when you get to have a shared experience with somebody like that. So anyway.
Wind it back a little bit. You were in San Francisco, you were in tech, and I'm assuming that you were like the rest of the folk here. You had a real roof over your head. Maybe you weren't in the van full time at that stage. Tell me about how you got to your home, your office, your vehicle. What, tell me about where you live, and what choices went into deciding on a VW van versus a, you know, a truck with a camper or a Sprinter. Sprinter seems to be the choice for so many these days. You know, obviously I'm in the Land Cruiser camp and try to
Oh,
find a
love your
roof
rig.
every night.
Love your
So
rig.
tell me
It's
about,
beautiful.
yeah, thank you. I spent some time in an old 78 Westphalia. They're great vehicles. Tell us all about what you're driving and what you're living in.
The where I fell in love with Vanagon's, and this is pre before I forget the guy's name, came up with like hashtag van life. I had gone through a little bit of a breakup, and we're rolling up into Thanksgiving break, and I had a coworker say, "You should go to Maui." I'd never been to Hawaii, and I was like, "Yeah, I'll go to Maui." And this is, you know, when I weighed 30 pounds less, and I was all about climbing mountains all the time, and I was just kind of just starting into the photography thing. And I was looking around on for Airbnbs on Maui, and somebody had listed a couple of Vanagons on there. And I was like, that sounds like a great idea. The idea of rolling around and just staying on beaches, that seems like a great idea. And so I ended up talking to the guy and going back and forth. And I ended up booking the van for a week, and I ended up staying on the island for a month because it was just so fantastic. Yeah, I called up my boss at the time, and I'm like, "I'm using all my vacation time for the next 3 weeks. I'm just staying here." It also helped that I kind of, you know, met a girl on the backside of the island and had a nice romance with, yeah, it was just, that's a whole story in its own right. But that was in a lot of ways kind of like the initiation of kind of that kind of approach to travel, where it's a little bit more slower, if that makes sense. And then just kind of fell in love with the van again, just ripping around on the backside of Maui. And so I'd kind of always been looking for one. And there's a website called the Samba, which is where a lot of the old heads, the salty old original guard of Vanagons and VWs hang out. And I saw one pop up for sale. It was painter's tape green, and I was like, "Yeah, that's the one." It was the right price. It was in Colorado Springs. Jumped in the car with my dad, drove 50 across Western US. I had it looked at by a shop there, and that was that. My goal with it was always to turn it into a vehicle I could do the Pan American with the idea that I was going to do a few trial runs driving the length of the Baja Peninsula in it. I did a 180 conversion in it with Stefan's Auto House in Sacramento and some other things to kind of turn it into something that could handle the wear and tear and the pounding of something like the Pan American, or ripping around on the fun dirt roads of Baja and some of those trails. So, yeah, I call her Barb. She's a bit of a beast. She's now driven the length of the Baja Peninsula with me 6 times, which has been a blast. Kind of all over the place. Obviously, there's still endless corners of the peninsula I've yet to explore, which I love hearing about as I listen to the podcast. And now that Benchmark has their new awesome map out, It's been fun to sit there and just nerd out on little roads and corners that I didn't know existed. Yeah, and then I don't like flying as I try to avoid it as much as possible. I had met a woman I was dating who lived in Fort Collins, and so as I started to shift to working remote for the tech companies I was doing work with, and then also doing more projects for DMOs, I started bouncing back and forth between San Francisco and the Front Range, just crisscrossing. I don't know how many times I did it, 15, 16 times, the Western US in the van again, just taking different routes, exploring different corners. And I wouldn't call myself a full-time van lifer. I would definitely say it's more part-time, but I've done some nice solid 4 or 5 month stretches where I'm living in it. Yeah, full-time. Yeah, I still have my place in San Francisco, but I was there one day last week. And then yeah, then I made the tough, I mean, it wasn't too tough a decision, but where I was going to walk away from tech and kind of go all in on the starting the magazine and doing this sort of content creation, storytelling type thing. And yeah, there was definitely some financial risk that comes with that, the walking away from that cushy, lucrative Bay Area salary and all the perks that come with catered breakfast, lunch, dinner, and workout plans and all that sort of stuff.
Kombucha on tap.
Yeah, you know, just obscene amounts of money to go and, you know, your next meal is paid for, you know, it's all in your hands. I mean, not that it's all in your hands, it's a team effort, but yeah, but I don't
Well,
regret it. There's
these
not a day
Vanagons aren't
about.
cheap anymore, and keeping them on the road isn't cheap anymore. So you do have to have some source of income. I understand. So getting onto your Baja affliction,
Yeah.
tell me about that first time you were down there, and
Well,
what that did to you, if it had an effect. And then let's get on to the 5, 6 times you've been down, and tell me about your new gathering, Escapar a la Baja.
yeah. Well, the first time, I mean, as a Californian, as you know, Baja's like this mythical place. It's sort of like you reference it, it's, you know, it's Baja, California, so there's like, and it sort of, at least it loomed in my imagination as a kid when I would look at maps that I would pull out of the Nat Geos that sat on our bookshelves, and I was like, what is that insane peninsula to the south of California? And the first time I went, I was 22, 23, and I was, you know, looking at a map, and I saw that there was this road that wound south from Tijuana to, it was before Ensenada is what it is today. But I was like, I don't even know how I heard about it. I'm like, I want to go and roll up on a taco stand on a beach and eat fish tacos. Like that was like the goal. And a couple friends in San Diego, and I was like, we gotta, let's just go to Baja. We can do that. I don't even think we had passports back then. This is all pre-9/11. And we just went, yeah, we just went ripping down. And I remember pulling up on the beach, and there was a woman cooking fish tacos, open air kind of taco stand, big metal plate sitting over a burn barrel and wooden fire. And the tacos were like 25 cents, looking at, you know, the big bay there at Ensenada. And then went up to the point kind of overlooking it. And I go, this place is awesome. Like what I, and that was kind of the moment I don't know what it is. It just kind of got under my skin. And, you know, it took another 15 years before I got to drive the whole thing, but I would do kind of slow little, I'd stick my toe in the water, but mostly just on the northern side, like Tecate and Mexicali and Bahía de Guadalupe and some places like that. But finally, it was one Christmas, one holiday season. I'm like, I'm driving the whole thing. Which I didn't accomplish. I made it as far as Bahia de Concepcion and hit Playa Santa's Pack. And I was like, I don't, I had never seen anything like that. That first rise over the hill just south of Mulegé, when Santa's Pack is laid out there and the boats are in the harbor. And I just remember like my stomach going into my throat. I got teary-eyed. It was, I mean, I had had that moment just south of San Felipe at that pull-off when you see the, what is it, the Isla de los Muertos? I forget the name of those islands, just before Puerto Citos. And there's that pull-off there where it's just magnificent. It's so beautiful. Yeah, just moment, but that moment, Santa's pack is that. It's just burned into my brain. It was so absolutely staggeringly beautiful. And I was like, I want to do the rest of the peninsula, but I don't want to leave here. This is just crazy. And then we ended up staying a week on that beach and met a bunch of people and had an unbelievable Christmas. And there was this family, a bunch of kids traveling to La Paz whose parents had died. We bought them all Christmas presents and a tree. It was just a magical evening. Just singing and dancing. It was just wonderful. And yeah, I was done at that point. I'm like, I'm never not spending a winter down in Baja. And so now I usually go for like 2, 3 months. But what I've come to discover is Baja definitely feels like a small town. You just meet people and the same people as you bounce from different places. And now each winter as the overlanders and van lifers have been coming down, you meet a lot of the same people and you're leapfrogging and sometimes you're caravanning together and sometimes you're on the same beach and you're swapping beta and information about where to go. And it was my second or third winter down where as I was talking with people, being somebody who likes to throw gatherings, I was like, hey, I know this amazing beach outside of La Paz, Playa Tecolote. Let's just all meet there for a few days. And I would just kind of tell people and it spread word of mouth. And I was just with my terrible Spanish. I was like, well, let's just call it Escapar a la Baja, which is terrible Spanish, but you know, that's the name at this point. And, yeah, the first one we had like some 60 vehicles. I got Soundbox, which was a client of mine to send a bunch of their big portable speakers, which, you know, is pretty common around Baja. The loudspeaker outside the Mercado. But yeah, so we had some speakers down there and just had some music on the beach and everyone just started each little caravan or van started doing their own informal happy hours or making food for everyone. And yeah, now it's kind of grown to had over 250 vehicles there last year. People set up volleyball nets and hosted a volleyball tournament and one wheel races and Super Mario Kart projected and all I mean more happy hours and hilarious bars set up. It's kind of become a little, you know, people are doing artwork and yeah, it's I'm more just try to make sure that there's a really good beach cleanup, portos, trash, garbage are taken care of. We've been very fortunate to have support from Visit Baja California Sur, just making sure that we're introducing people to local tour operators, some local lodging and dining that are very van friendly. There's a couple of awesome hotels that have opened up in La Paz. I wouldn't even call them hotels. They're more like van friendly RV-ish parks where they also have rooms you can rent, but they also want van lifers to come and, you know, stay for a few nights, which is great when you've been, you know, traveling and the back country of Baja and you're ready to get a shower and, you know, have good internet for a little bit. Yeah, it's been great to kind of plug people into that community and just to have the local support there in La Paz, which is such a wonderful town. I love it. I kind of feel, I mean, Cabo's Cabo, something wrong with it, but it's not how I like to, you know, do Baja. La Paz feels like it's a city by Mexicanos for Mexicanos, and it feels you can get anything done on your vehicle there if you want to. Yeah, it's a great town, but anyway, yeah, I'm rambling. Sorry.
So let's take a second right here where we can tell folks about our friend Jeff at Baja Bound Insurance. I'm going to let you do the pitch. Tell me
Oh, hell yeah.
what you say to folks when they're asking you about how to insure their vehicle for Baja.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Jeff and the team at Baja Bound have been a supporter of the Escapar event from its inception. I had used their, I don't even know how I found it. I was just Googling around. I knew I needed to get Mexican insurance and came across Baja Bound. I loved the resources that they have on their site, just about amazing, awesome, interesting things. And I think that's probably why, as a storyteller, I went with them, because they were doing, I was like, what kind of insurance company is sitting there like doing long form travel logs about Baja? I'm like, they just seemed like they had a, and I just sent them an email, hey, I want to throw this event. Do you want to help out with the whole thing? And they were great. And they've been a partner on it every year since. And when I've broken down just with their towing, I don't know what to call it, like their not towing package, but just the fact that they've got great connections with to get your vehicles towed. It's just it's peace of mind. I mean, I've only broken down a couple times out there, but it matters, especially when you're in a remote place and you got to figure something out. But yeah, they've been great to work with. Jeff's awesome. Insurance is great. I highly recommend them. They've been, and they love the community. I mean, that's pretty awesome too.
Here at Slow Baja, we can't wait to drive our old Land Cruiser south of the border. And when we go, we'll be going with Baja Bound Insurance. Their website's fast and easy to use. Check them out at BajaBound.com. That's BajaBound.com, serving Mexico travelers since 1994.
Do you wish you'd join me on the Nora Mexican 1000? The sold-out Slow Baja class was truly epic. We had an amazing array of vehicles and folks driving them. The Don K, the Chimp, the vintage Manxes, the vintage racing Broncos, my old Land Cruiser, Bronco Privateer, shout out to you, brother, 1980s FJ60, the Silver Lady, let me just say, the man called Yeti and the wild YOLO. They had an amazing Johnny Johnson tribute Ford Ranger truck. They rolled with us, changed gears and rolled with us on the last day of the event. And I think they had a ball, as did all the other folks in the new Jeeps and the Raptors and all the folks that came down the peninsula with us. Again, Big Ole absolutely blew up the internet, but they were right there smiling at the end. You got to check that out, folks. I'm not going to go into it, but the next opportunity to have some fun in the Slow Baja Safari class is the Nora Baja 500. It's September 29th through October 2nd. It is Ensenada to Ensenada, which means logistically it's a heck of a lot less challenging than the Mexican 1000. So if you want to come down, have all the fun and a lot less logistics to deal with, the Nora Baja 500 is the event for you. Shoot me a message. I think the Slow Baja Safari class is going to sell out quick. So if you're interested, let me know soon. Also, next opportunity after that is the Baja XL Rally. It's every other year. It's coming up in February of 2023. Again, it's a totally different animal. It's 200 something overlanders, 25, 30 countries should be represented again now that COVID's behind us. And it is a great time. Bring your rooftop tent, bring your funky vehicle, get on down the coast at a very slow roll. There's a competition category, which is like a giant Easter egg hunt, or there's the adventure category, the touring category, which we roll in, which we just break out our benchmark map, figure out which squiggly dirt road looks the most scenic, and we take it, and nobody judges. It's an awful lot of fun. It's too much to explain here. If you're interested, it's February 17th through February 26th, 2023. Shoot me a message through the contact feature at slowbaja.com, direct message Instagram, direct message Facebook, or slowbaja@gmail, and I will get you all the information you need for you to make an informed decision if Baja is right for you.
Well, hey, let's get on. You're good? We're ready to keep rolling?
I mean, the one other thing I would say about Baja Bound as somebody who drives an 82 Vanagon is they're really good about being able to pull the custom, like kind of the unique insurance policies you need to get for those older and more unique vehicles. So if you're rocking like a schoolie or anything kind of odd and custom, which you know is have driving an older one, you kind of need somebody who's actually going to work with the underwriters. And so, yeah, I mean, that matters. I mean, if you got a new Sprinter, not so much, but yeah, for those of us in our funky, weird vehicles, yeah, they're awesome for that.
Well, I recently had a conversation with Jeff about the Sprinter van scene because they're currently capped at $300,000 as to what they can write. So if you're rocking a van that's over that, which I think you can get there with the Sprinter.
There's another event happening this weekend back to Baja, which is sponsored by like Storyteller
Flare and Flare Space.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And some of those Storyteller rigs are definitely pushing that. They're beautiful. They're works of art.
All right. So let's keep rolling here. All right. Let's keep rolling with Josiah from Journal of Lost Time, Escapar a la Baja. What else do you do, man? How many other things you got rolling on here that people should know about?
Well, Escapar a la Baja became the first of the Lost Places van life and overlanding events, where we kind of, at its core, they're my favorite places to go hang out and get lost for a month. And they're very van life friendly. So I'm actually here in Bisbee, Arizona for our next one. There'll be another one up in the Wind River area of Wyoming on the east side of the Wind River Range, kind of near Lander, probably the closest town that folks might know about. That's just beautiful and epic. It's a gorgeous piece of land. The community there just loves having van lifers and overlanders rolling in. There'll be like hot air balloon rides and buffalo viewing things and bighorn sheep and all sorts of really fun stuff. And there's another one on the Oregon coast. And then of course, another one outside of Moab in October, which of course, you know, Moab with Canyonlands and Arches, but, that's kind of like the event series we've put on, very overlanding and van life friendly. It's meant to be an introduction to those places, kind of an opportunity to learn a little bit about them and explore and, just hang out in what are some of our favorite little corners of North America. Right now there's six of them each year. Baja's definitely like become the big fun one, the most successful one right now.
And that's your season kickoff.
Yeah. We kick it off every year. It is a joy every time. This past year I crossed to Tecate, but, it's a magic thing when you roll into San Felipe and pull up at Kiki's or La Palapa or wherever. And I mean, that's how I do. I realize there's lots of other awesome places to stay there, which I need to try, but and then you walk into town and you have your first margarita on the Malecón and you just start smiling. And you look around the other vans and overlanders and you realize that the next 2-3 months are just going to be packed full of beauty and joy and adventure. And yeah, it's great. It's great. It's a wonderful feeling.
Well, work me down the peninsula. So I go back to San Diego State spring break, circa 1986 was the first spring break that I went to San Felipe, stayed at Kiki's when I was just a youngster, a few years older than we were.
Yep.
Coco Locos Make You Love Longer was one of the signs that I adored. And the other sign that I adored was on the top of the bathroom that says, "No dinero, no caca."
Yeah, that's right. So that's right.
If you didn't pay to use the bathroom, you were not to use the bathroom.
So good.
Yeah. So, and I got to very quickly realize I did not like sleeping on the hard floor of the Palapa that they built there. So it's a cement pad, folks. Let me set the scene for you. Beachfront, San Felipe, Palapas built over a cement pad that would have a picnic table downstairs. Pretty in the 80s anyways, pretty rickety, dangerous stairs to get to the sleep loft. A little railing around the sleep loft, but certainly no safety built into that. So if you were rolling around, play fighting, say drinking 100 beers between 6 a.m. and midnight, there's a lot could go wrong and you could fall off of one of those things. But Kiki's was a fabulous spot because you could walk into town. It was a bit of a hike, but you could walk in and you could certainly stumble back after your night at the Miramar or wherever you were eating fish tacos and drinking more. So I realized very quickly that I was willing to drive from San Diego to San Francisco in my little Datsun on Wednesday night before spring break, get my dad's 78 Westphalia, drive back Thursday morning, so an all-day drive back to San Diego on Thursday, and then leave at 5 a.m. or 6 a.m. Friday morning to go to San Felipe, which was another six-ish hours from San Diego. And just so I would have this luxury of a van for a long weekend a week in San Felipe to have the, you know, instead of sleeping in a tent or sleeping under the stars, just to have that pop top up and a little, you know, one burner stove to make pancakes on in the morning. And so it was a little bit of van life before van life was a thing. And then I'd do it all in reverse, drive it back to San Diego, drive back to San Francisco, jump back in my little Datsun and drive, you know, 6,000 RPMs all the way down I-5 to go back to school on whatever the Monday following spring break. It was crazy.
That's incredible.
That van really made the week in San Felipe so much more comfortable. So walk me through your Baja favorites, working yourself down from you know, East Coast, West Coast. You sort of already got to one of the places that has stopped me in my tracks before. We're just getting to Santa Spac and say, whoa, do we have to go any further? This is enough. You know? So let's just spend a few minutes picking through the places that you really love and want people to see on your site and see in person.
Yeah, I mean, as you know, Baja is just, it's van life perfection. It's, if there's a beach with three vehicles there and you want to have one to yourself, drive 5 minutes down the road and you'll find another one. Like, it just, it's endless. Even when you roll into something like Santa's Pack, and you know, now that the pandemic's over, the RVs are back and they kind of fill up there and they crank, just drive to the next one, just drive to the next one. There's endless that you can find, if you're willing to take the dirt road. So, and I love driving to the end of the dirt road. And especially now that we've got something like the new Benchmark map, I feel even more confident just sort of driving down those long washes out to some epic beach. And so, the ones that I'm particularly in love, man, I feel weird sharing some of these because there's somewhere I've never seen another.
I know, I was just going to say,
ooh, man, you're asking
maybe
me to
you don't have to. No, just work your way down. You don't have to give away all your secrets. Just work your way down and remind people. Hey, wait, hang on for a second. Before we get into that, you've become, I hate to use this word influencer, maybe a more appropriate word is an instigator. You have certainly led people to this place.
Sure.
Maybe, you know, I share that burden to some degree. Mm-hmm. How do you decode the, is it safe? How do you explain Baja, your experiences there, and get past the knee jerk reaction to, is somebody going to be stealing my van? Am I going to be hanging from an overpass, you know? Let's go into that a little
question.
Bit, and then I'll let you save all your secret spaces, places. But share a few of your faves if you don't mind.
What I tell people is when they ask, and everyone asks, like, don't you feel unsafe? Aren't you scared? And I go, officially, absolutely don't go. Unofficially, I have never once felt unsafe or scared ever in Baja. Now, I realize that I'm a white 40-year-old male that comes with a small amount of privilege and just sort of baked in confidence about certain things. So I put a giant asterisk over when I say that. I now have many solo female van lifer friends who have done it, and you know, they've been gracious enough to inform me in the ways in which they manage their safety and think in a way that I can't even fathom how they like manage where they go and how they go and how they move through this world and how they've translated that to Baja. And so there's some great images. You know, you can Google solo female van lifer in Baja. You can see on the Escapar website, there's been some beautiful stuff written by women who can speak to it, you know, far better than I could. Now, as for me and the friends, and sometimes when I've kind of led a caravan, where I've ever felt a little bit of anxiety is always what I call like the border crush, the border crunch, particularly around Mexicali and Tijuana, just that pressure of all the people there. And that can be a little intense and disorienting as you're first crossing over and you got to figure out street signs and a little bit of the craziness of the roads. And yeah, you know, I've gotten pulled over by the cops who shake me down for, you know, they say 400. And, you know, I'm one of those who's like, I give them $20. I'm like, no, I just say no until they're willing to take $20 and let me go. And I realize there's lots of competing opinions and some folks get really angry about it. And I'm like, that guy makes like $200 a month. I don't care. that he got $20 off of me to, you know, not waste my time. So I don't really sweat that. And so it doesn't bother me. I'm not scared when they pull me over. I don't have, you know, I'm more nervous when I get, and this is probably controversial, I'm more nervous when I'm pulled over by a police officer in the U.S. than I am when I'm pulled over by somebody in Mexico. I know he just wants to get his 20 bucks and let me move along. So once I did it the first time, every single successive time, it's more like, oh, great, I got to get through Mexicali just to get to the open highway. And it's more about getting to that feeling of just when the landscape opens up and you get to experience what I feel like is Baja, kind of past the border cities. And it'd be really, there's a reason why I don't take the western side, honestly. Like, don't get me wrong, San Quentin is awesome. And, but I'm just trying to get past Tijuana and Ensenada just to get to the big wide open spaces and some of that. So, and for people when they come down, I say, yeah, that first time going down, you're going to be a little nervous. But once you've done it, it's great. And if you're willing to come, I and now the folks that all helped make Escobar happen, we really just try to be a resource for people to help answer their questions. I mean, we fielded hundreds and thousands of questions for Escobar this past year from people going, and there's now the big massive WhatsApp group, and now there's like the Seeker group where everyone's on there just supporting each other and talking to each other and answering questions and where to find water and where to get good diesel and like, oh shit, the pumps aren't working at Gonzaga Bay and I don't got enough gas to make it to the next thing. Can somebody spot me 5 gallons and then I'll buy it from the back of the dude in the truck at the turnoff or Bay of LA. So it's been great to kind of see networks come together like that and to help facilitate some of that, because a lot of really experienced people from Sherry over the Whale, you know, Whale Magic has been so helpful for me over the years. Francisco and Mulahay, just folks have helped me out through the years. I'm just glad to kind of, I don't know, call it pay it forward or something like that. But yeah, it's been a joy.
Has Francisco gotten you to join the Rotary of Mulahay yet? Do you have a Mulahay registered business that you can be a fellow Rotarian?
No, I don't.
But
man, I love that town. What a wonderful town.
He loves his Rotary, and I love that guy, and I love town.
He loves his Rotary.
He has literally been taking care of me since 86, since I was down there for New Year's Eve with my dad in 86 in the Westphalia, and I didn't realize it. A cat came with the van. A kitten came with the van when my dad bought the van. First trip, we were down to Mulahay.
Awesome.
I didn't realize I was allergic to cats until I was locked in this van with one all the way down to Mulahay.
Yeah.
So Francisco was my helpful decoder way back then to get me a little meeting with the doctor who figured out that I had allergies, and then we could treat the allergies and then we could head back and I can avoid cats for the rest of my life. He's a great guy in a great town. And this is exactly what I wanted to get to. You made a Freudian slip. I don't know if you caught it. You referred to San Quentin as San Quentin. I'm not too far from San Quentin. I can't quite see it from where I live. But that road out of Ensenada can feel very much like prison these days with all that bumper to bumper traffic road construction. I was just there a couple months ago. So hitting the other side and making some time down the East Coast is really highly recommended now. Especially if you do make some time. Yeah, if you do make some time to stop, get your provisions, as you say, in your driving tips, get your provisions in San Felipe, stop at Alfonsina's, make your way down that coast. Well, keep rolling me down that coast. Tell me about some of the spots that you don't mind sharing. You've put together a fabulous, we'll introduce this again here, folks, but EscobarAlaBaja.com has an awful lot of information. I should certainly have this on Slow Baja. It really is an amazing resource about good manners, not driving at night, that, you know, the narrow highways, the military checkpoints, all that stuff that is sort of hard to explain. And those are the, in my opinion, those are the real hazards in Baja.
Yeah.
You may run into a bad apple. You may get pulled over. That happens, but the odds of that stuff are so much lower than what happens just driving down the peninsula. The big rigs, the narrow highway, the wildlife, the
road cows.
You know, Yeah, the potential that the person coming the other way on a Friday, Saturday, or Sunday in the afternoon may have had a few few cold ones and may not be driving with all of their faculties, or a perfectly maintained vehicle with good tires the way that your vehicle may be maintained. Yep. I think those are the real risks, exactly. And you lay them all out here. So that's an amazing resource. So I've interrupted, but get us back down the peninsula.
Well, I have, there's also something, if you Google Baja like nowhere else, there is a ongoing series that I've been doing where they're photo essays, articles, kind of about a lot of my favorite places. And there's a few more we need to add. And every time I go down, I kind of add a new one. I've got one I'm working on right now about Cabo Pulmo in the East Cape. As you kind of continue south out of San Felipe, you've got to stop at Cow Patty, which is just great people watching. It's a blast. You get a cold beer.
Shout out Drew Martin. Shout out. He's awesome. Cow Patty and your family.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a blast, especially when the taco truck's going. I try to get Mrs. lunch Roach. There. Yeah. It's a delight. And you know, like Alfonsina's, it is the best overpriced margarita that you've ever gotten. And that view is incredible. And Gonzaga Bay is such a special place. I have been going over recently, which I discovered 2 years ago on the drive up. What's the name of on the other side of the water, that community over there, and you can camp up on that peninsula. That view up there is unbelievable. It's incredible. There's no one else up there. Gosh, what's this called? I can't remember. I have to look on a map. But that's perfect. A really special
Gonzaga
place.
Bay secret spot.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of got to wind out there to that community back in there, and it's interesting. But
Catavina, walk me through that a little bit.
Catavina is, so what I love about Catavina, being a little bit of an amateur geology nerd, is that it's the geologic kind of heart of the peninsula, and the rocks there have a lot in common with the rocks found in the Sierra Nevada, because it's all been uplifted, it's all from the Farallon Plate, subducting under the North American Plate. And it's like Joshua Tree on Mars with the weirdest tentacle looking and enormous cacti. And the painted caves are incredible and that weird geodesic dome. And if you get it just right after rain, everything's in bloom. And it's just one of the most beautiful places. So usually when I'm coming back on the 5, I'll duck up to Catavina for a bit. And then if you drive out by the airport there, there's that fantastic little restaurant with the abuelita. I can't remember her name, and the food's great for breakfast. It's one of my favorite breakfast spots on the peninsula.
You're touching on Rancho Santa Ynez, and
exactly.
You know, I've never been there. 30 something years driving around Baja, and I've never ever gotten over there. So next trip for sure, I've got to make that happen. But you had a beautiful awesome. Write up on the place, and obviously off-road racers have been going there since 67, and people who flew around Baja before that was the spot for you could land, you could get gas. It was local intel. But your take on Catavina, I think, is captivating, because it's a place that really I enjoy, and I never spend enough time there. You know,
yeah, it's a trip, and you can drive, especially on the east side, you can drive up into some crazy formations, and there's even some for climbers. Some are starting to find there's some pretty good bouldering and stuff back in there, where some folks are getting in there and starting to nerd out on it, where they're like, I don't want to do the Joshua Tree, Alabama Hills crowds. Where can I get rock that is like that with no other people? And you're like, go to Catavina, drive a day south of the border and do it up.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's only a minute off of the road. And you're into those beautiful boulders and stunning cacti. And it really is like right there.
It's gorgeous.
And once you're off the road, there's nothing. I mean, there's nobody. It's not it's a beautiful soul. Place. Yeah, it's a beautiful spot if you're a self-contained camper. So back down the peninsula, I'm on your Baja Like Nowhere Else site, and we're going to roll into Bahia de Los Angeles. Make your case.
If you had to ask me to pick a favorite place in the entire, I would kind of go for Bay of LA. I mean, or Bahia de Los Angeles, and Playa La Cruz. I mean, ecologically, it's kind of the intersection of kind of the beginning of the more southern Baja ecological zone and the Sonoran and Chihuahua deserts to the north. And so it's just a fascinating mashup of plant life. And I'm in those islands, and the fact that one of them is a volcano and it looks like a volcano, and it's just so blue and beautiful, and there's no cell service, and it'll go from, you know, brutal winds to just absolute perfection on a paddleboard. It's a really special, and you know, you roll into town and there's rancheros on horseback, and it just feels outside of time. Like, it's just,
for sure,
it's a special place. And then you take the road south out of town, heading out, and that stretch basically south of Bahia de Los Angeles, the dirt road south,
the dirt road, yeah,
yeah, that's that basically from Bahia de Los Angeles all the way down to San Francisco. And you know, if you're coming off the highway, it's like through El Arco, like that whole area in San Rafael, which I think you referenced at the beginning of the call, like that whole area is just unreal. Like, it's crazy. It's so beautiful. And just those long washes where they're just those massive groves of cacti out to the bright blue sea. And like, it's just this hazy mashup of like blue and green and the red rock. And there's not a soul for miles. And I just get out and sit on top of my van and crack open a Tecate and just smile at it all. It's so beautiful. It's wonderful. Yeah. And then you roll into Rancho Escondido and Don Oscar's there with his big grin. And next thing you know, you're eating great food and catching up on the events of the year. And yeah, it's a wonderful feeling. It's a beautiful part of the world.
How did your relationship with Rancho Escondido come about? Because that's a pretty cool spot. I haven't been there. I'm well aware. You made some really spectacularly compelling photographs for me to make that a stop on my next trip. Because I've driven down that road a few times over the last 3 years and sadly have not been slow Baja enough to be able to stop in. So that's on my radar.
I love staring at maps and kind of geeking out on it. And so I was messing with Google Earth and a lot of satellite views, Google satellite, just kind of trying to see what was out there in that corner of, cause I mean, you know, I'm always looking for another white sand beach that I can kind of have all to myself and feel like I've explored a little bit, even though, you know, we've looked at most things on this planet at this point. But, I went online and I was in the Talk Baja group, which is awesome. And I just posted, hey, does anybody know about the road conditions south out of Bahia de Los Angeles? And Sherry Bondi commented and said, yeah, the road's fine. You need to stop at Rancho Escondido and meet up with Don Oscar. So she was the one who turned me on to them. And somehow I got in touch with them, started chatting with his daughter. They were like, yeah, come on out. No problem. And that was the first year I decided that I was going to shoot a film about doing a road trip through Baja in a caravan. And that was like the original Baja Like Nowhere Else video, where I interviewed Don Oscar, Francisco, and a couple other folks who are all locals, just about why they love Baja. And that was kind of the first film I made about Baja a few years ago. That's kind of how I got in touch. We interviewed Don Oscar. I just had a wonderful few days out there, just having a blast riding around on horses and watching the sunset every evening from on top of the hill behind their house with like the painted caves are, and they've got a little capilla up there. Yeah, it was wonderful. It was wonderful. So that's how I got connected with them. And we still email every now and then and text. They're a wonderful family.
So it's hard to explain. It's hard for me to explain that those sort of places just exist in Baja. And I just happened to come off of a 3-day stay at Rancho La Balota and Boyota and Tecate. And again, 2,800 acres off the grid, no cell, no Wi-Fi, fabulous hosts, eating by candlelight, sipping the tequila, you know, life around the fire. There's something primal inside us.
It's magical.
Something primal that makes us want to do that in our souls. And as we've surrounded ourselves with other things and screens and whatnot, it's pretty amazing to get back to that. So I was really touched by that, that film work and that those images, and you're compelling me. You're an instigator, as I say. You're sending me to places that I want to see. Let's keep rolling down the peninsula in sort of a speed run now.
Okay.
Mulegé, Bahia Concepcion, Agua Verde, and you know, we don't have to talk about them all, but let's take those three in because you know.
Well, one I did want to mention is like, and I feel like it kind of gets passed, and I think you and I talked about it, is Santa Rosalia, just north of Mulegé. Like, people just zip by because they're booking to get to Mulegé, and they don't drive and do a loop through that town. This last winter, I went and spent a couple nights there. It's a trip. Like, it's this old French mining town, so it looks like some weird wooden New Orleans, and there's all these weird little bars and discotecas, and there's the bakery. That place is rad. I had a really good time there. Obviously, Mulegé is like... But I haven't even been out to all the crazy beaches around Mulegé, too, that, like, Scott Schisler is a good buddy of mine there, and a few others have recommended to me. Don Chano's is an awesome place to do the, like, van and RV camping there where you're right in town. You can walk out to the lighthouse. I didn't go to Hotel Serenidad until 2 years ago. What an unbelievable place. It sits in my head. It looks like a movie set, and I want to do some kind of event there at some point because it's just so cool and awesome. And obviously El Candido is wonderful.
Got to be there for the pig roast Saturday night.
Everyone keeps telling me about that. I got to do it. Never done it.
I mean, sadly, John Wayne's not there and Don's not there, but you know, whatever. Yeah. I think you're absolutely right. We need to have a Slow Baja Journal of Lost Time pig roast meetup. Let's work on that.
Then heading south, Nathan and his family at Playa Buenaventura and the R-Bar. I think the R-Bar is my favorite bar in all of Baja. It is like everything you'd want from a beachfront, middle of nowhere, salty bar. And Nathan and his family are just awesome. They're like super friendly to van lifers and overlanders to just camp right there. They've got hot showers. It's awesome. That place is great. And then now we get to like what I feel like is my favorite stretch of coast, because as you head south, there are roads and washes, and there's like San Basilio. Everyone knows that one. It breaks my heart. They put up the, put up the post where you can't get out on the beach now. And I'd love to know more about who put them up there and like what that's all about. But, and what is it? Playa Muerta. I think that's how you say it. That's such a great spot, but, there's some really great roads, and there's some that I've gotten out to that I've never seen anyone else at, just these old fishing camps that are just unreal. And as you roll down to Loreto, and Loreto is such a great town. Every time I go there, I find some new, awesome, great place to check out. And the beaches south of there are just delightful. Even like the big marina at Playa Escondido is still a great place to go and park for the night with hot showers and great Wi-Fi when I need to like upload videos and do stuff like that. It's really, really great. And obviously Rattlesnake and the others are just awesome. And then Agua Verde, I mean, people are finding out about it, and I know I had a hand in that, but and others have too. It's one of the most beautiful places in the world. It is special. It is remarkable. I know. But I mean, they know it's like on Google Maps, you know, like, what are you going to do?
You know, I mean, it's on iOverlander. It's on, it's out there. You can't hide these places anymore.
Fortunately, it's still like a 3-4 day drive, and people are terrified of coming down that road. So like, I can still get beaches even in the height of the season all to myself down there. But that place, and I've seen it when everything was in bloom, like a couple years ago, 2 or 3 years ago, when like they had all those, the late season hurricanes ripped through. And so it would look like a jungle with how verdant it was. And it's just jaw-droppingly, incredibly beautiful. It's just an unreal place. It's magical. And I'm grateful for that I was able to shoot it and film it and photo it a few times. And then heading south. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think we're going to need to save some more, maybe more on Baja Sur on a later conversation.
Sounds good.
Make an agreement that the next time we do this, we are sitting around a campfire with a Fortaleza in our hand.
Sounds
or
perfect.
Reasonable substitute. Because, you know, you've given us an awful lot to digest, and we're rolling up here on the end of people's attention span. So
tell us,
where's the best place to keep in touch with you, follow you, find out what you're up to, mm-hmm. where you are. And if mm-hmm. folks have overland vehicles, van lifers, or even a guy like me with an old Land Cruiser and a cot and a tent, you know, want to come and, yep, and yep. hang out, let me know. Let the Slow Baja world know what are the best ways to follow you and
sounds great.
Keep in touch.
Well, there's my personal Instagram, which is JOSIAHQ. You can follow me on there.
Josiah Q
on Instagram. If you're looking for information about Escobar La Baja or the big Baja Van Life and Overlanding event, you can go to EscobarLaBaja.com. You can just Google Baja Van Life Gathering. It should be one of the first ones you see there. There's a good email list you can sign up for there. You know, we've got some team meetings we're going to be doing in the next couple months with some folks as we start scheming some bigger and cooler and awesomer things for next year. You can obviously go to thejournaloflosttime.com and see all sorts of, you can look under events to see where our other events are, or you can just sign up for our newsletter for, it comes out usually once a week. And there'll be stuff about our events and also new articles about rad places in the world, including Baja. We've got a few pieces still about Baja in the pipeline coming out over the next couple of months. But yeah, those are pretty much the best places. And obviously you can find the Journal of Lost Time on all of the social networks, from Facebook to Instagram to Pinterest to Twitter. You can follow along there, whichever one's your
it's all there. Yeah. And what I love about it is you've got a deep dive, English and Spanish.
Yep.
Music. You've got music right there that people can set the scene musically. You've got short films and mm-hmm. a lot of frickin' information. You know, and that people can access all this stuff for free and take the trip mentally before they take the trip physically.
Yeah, I think the Baja Like Nowhere Else playlist on Spotify, I think people will really, really enjoy. It's music for road tripping in, you know, the place that's tied for my favorite place in the world. Baja's a special place. It's magic.
Well, I fully agree. We're going to leave it right there. Thanks for making some time to tell Slow Baja about it. And I look forward to getting down to Baja with you in person, hopefully before Escobar next year, but
it'll be great. I can't wait.
If not, it'll be then.
Well, I'll try to come see you in the city.
Thanks, Josiah.
Have a good one.
Yeah. Well, I hope you enjoyed that show with Josiah Rowe. If there's somebody that you'd like to hear in conversation on Slow Baja, all you need to do is go over to my website, slowbaja.com, click that contact button, tell me who you'd like to hear, and I'll check it out. While you're there, at slowbaja.com, you can visit the Slow Baja store. If you've got a dad or a grad, maybe they want a Slow Baja hat or a Slow Baja tee or maybe a Slow Baja sweatshirt. Check it out. It's all there. All sizes are in stock. All styles are in stock. It's not going to last for long, folks, so check it out. And again, thanks for listening. If you're a Spotify or iTunes listener, please take a second, smash that 5-star review. Write something nice. It really does help people find the show, and that really is important for me to keep this thing going and growing. So in closing, to paraphrase my old friend Steve McQueen, Baja lover, Baja's life. Anything that happens before or after is just waiting. Have I told you about my friend True Miller? You've probably heard the podcast, but let me tell you, her vineyard, Adobe Guadalupe Winery, is spectacular. From the breakfast at her communal table, bookended to an intimate dinner at night, their house-bred Azteca horses, Solomon the Horseman, will get you on a ride that'll just change your life. The food, the setting, the pool, it's all spectacular. AdobeGuadalupe.com. For appearing on Slow Baja today, our guests will receive the beautiful Benchmark Map 72-page Baja Road and Recreation Atlas. Do not go to Baja without this, folks. You never know when your GPS is going to crap out, and you're going to want a great map in your lap. Trust me.